Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right, and a very good, beautiful, Don and I were just talking about what a gorgeous morning this is out there. I'm sure there are probably a number of people out there who forgot to move their clocks forward, and they're sitting there snoozing away thinking that it's 7 o'clock, when in reality it's 6 minutes after 8 o'clock, and probably why the phone lines aren't totally full. We have Diane waiting to talk, but do have some open lines, so if you're one of those semi-awake people up early with your question, be a real good time to dial 210-599-5555. So much to talk about, so much to do, but of course I hate to keep people waiting. So let's just get started with phone calls early and say good morning, Diane.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Good morning, daylight savings. No, that was sarcasm.
Well, it's one of my favorite days of the year because I know I'm always going to be going to work in the dark, but it sure is going to be nice to get home and have an extra hour of daylight to get my stuff done, spend a little more time in the garden, and maybe shorten that list of things that I'm always behind on.
I get that, but doesn't it happen naturally, the day get longer and shorter?
Of course they do. That's when the change of seasons, you know, first day of summer is the longest day of the year, and the first day of fall is the equinox, and then the shortest day of the year is the first day of winter. So it does happen naturally, but boy, that just having that extra hour is like a bonus, meaning it's going to stay light now, you know, probably until 8 o'clock instead of just 7 o'clock. So anyway, if you probably have a list about like mine of all the things I need to get caught up on. So I'll give up an extra hour of sleep. I just wish they'd leave it alone now and leave it on daylight savings year round.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Just let it be. Anyway,
yeah.
Okay, Bob. I have tried to grow an avocado. Well, the first one got, you know, in the snowmageddon. It tried to come back the next year, but I think the damage was done. So then I planted another one. It's a Joey. And I bundle them up, and I mean, I do all kinds of stuff to wrap them. And it survived the really cold snap we had this year.
Right.
And then the other cold snaps, I still bundled it up and everything, but I don't think it's coming through. I mean, everything is brown. I'm waiting to see if some goes back from the root, but should I just leave them in a pot for a few years, or are they not going to be the Texas tree?
I'm starting to think that they have not told us the truth about how cold hardy they are, because you and me and everybody else out there, what have seemed like relatively minor freezes have taken quite a toll on them. So I am kind of changing my recommendations on them a little bit, and I think it probably would be good to leave them in a pot a little bit longer, but you've got to watch your watering so carefully, because they get very upset if they get too dry. They get very upset if they stay too wet, and they're just kind of wimps, especially compared to citrus, which, you know, have very definitely suffered from the cold. But avocados are just not turning out to be the easy things that we all thought they were going to be. I'm sure a good gardener can grow them well in a pot. I'm thinking and we may plant some more here at the nursery. I don't fool with them in Bernie because I know they're not going to survive the cold up there. But I'm thinking that any more that we plant, I'm going to put them in a raised bed just to be sure they have good drainage, kind of, you know, I adjusted their whims a little bit and see if maybe we can grow them. But I say that, but then I look, there used to be, and it frozen died in 2021, but around the corner from the nursery, and in the not-too-busy season, Roberta and I usually come in and walk a couple of miles before we go to work in the morning, and there was an avocado tree that was probably 25 feet tall and 15 feet wide, and the man came out and invited. He said, oh, pick all the avocados you want, because that thing was always loaded, but of course have no idea what it was. So I know we can grow them here, but it's becoming my opinion that they're just not quite as simple as we were originally led to believe. So yeah, I think if I were in your situation, I'd probably keep them in pot, and I would keep them in a relatively small pot, because as you well know, when you move in a small plant into a big pot, it doesn't dry out evenly, and avocados don't like that either.
Okay, so what is there a variety that you like, or is it just
Joy is about as good as they come. There's Opal, there are a bunch of different ones out there, but Joy, I think that would be one of the best choices around.
Okay, now one other quick question. I planted two loquats to block a neighbor's view into my yard.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a big opening at the end of their patio. That's a whole nother story, but they grew. They're taller than the house that they're blocking, except now the low area has lost all of its branches because the top is so big. Can I cut the top half off of one of them? Because planting another plant isn't really an option for me right now.
Okay.
And I'm trying to get sun to come in there so more branches will grow. Would that be okay?
Well, and you've just hit the nail on the head. If you cut it back, if the area that you cut back gets good bright sunlight, then it will branch, it will grow more branches. But a lot of people don't recognize that the reason the lower branches have gone is because they get no sun. You cut them back and nothing happens. It just gets barer. So if by cutting it back you will greatly increase the amount of sunlight going into that area, yes, it will branch and will fill in that blank area. That's always an option. I understand it's, you know, not always possible to plant, but there's some perennials and things like that that could go in front of them that would fill that up nicely, so you didn't have to go through all the cutback process. And there are things you could do without really planting a big shrub, but if it works better just to have a thicker bunch of loquats, you can certainly cut it back. As you know, loquats grow easily from seed. So if you have a little seedling or two come up underneath the bunch, you can move them around while they're small, or if you would like, or, you know, you can let them sprout and grow and then just stick another one down there. Probably would be a good thing to do, because this problem is going to repeat itself as the top gets really thick again. And it's not like you have to go buy another plant. You can plant an avocado seed. And if you can't grow an avocado, then maybe garden's not, I mean, a loquat, maybe oh. Gardening is not your best hobby to have going, because they are so easy.
Well, and that's a good idea. The problem is I haven't had loquats in 3 years. They've all,
right.
We've had these horrible winters, and
yeah.
I'll find volunteers here and maybe just move it in front, mm-hmm. and keep it trimmed low so that it stays bushy.
That would be a good plan.
Okay, Bob, thank you so much. Now I got to get to my long list of chores in this beautiful day.
Well, you get out and enjoy, Diane. It's always always fun to talk to you in the morning, and you guys have a wonderful, wonderful Sunday.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. All right. Looks like Terry and Linda are in line, and Terry is next. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I heard your conversation yesterday with Howard Garrett, and you talked. It went to the trees situation that I have, the Mexican sycamores.
Uh-huh.
And I've got them, I have over a dozen of them here that are all at different stages of leafing out.
Right.
And there's about two of them that haven't shown any signs of leafing out. And one of them is the one I called late fall, called you and asked you about the gophers seem to have eaten the root ball under it. Now, the larger roots are still on it. There's about three of the roots that come out laterally. And it's about 1 to 1.5 inch thick diameter roots.
Uh-huh.
it's not showing any signs of leafing out yet. And I'm just wondering what would you say would be the – now, I've scratched the trunk, mm-hmm. and I haven't really seen any green on the trunk. Now, if I go down to the roots, those roots that I've got exposed, they do show some green on them. You know, so they're still healthy. So
right.
And
you've taken care of the gopher problem?
I don't think I'll ever have the gopher problem taken care of.
Well, just keep trapping. You can do it. You know, what looks like a lot of gophers is probably really just a few. What I would probably do, Terry, is individual branches on that tree, cut them back by about half. What that does is concentrates the auxins, the hormones that makes the buds break and grow. Sometimes a plant is kind of teetering on the edge of, am I going to come out or am I not going to come out? If you'll cut it back moderately like that, it concentrates the auxins that make those buds pop and start to grow, and then the plant starts to recover fairly quickly. I would do the same thing we always talk about, spraying down the trunk with water and all, but if it doesn't come out, then I think it's probably going to be more the result of gopher damage than necessarily weather, because every sycamore that I'm looking at, you know, we have several of them planted around the parking lot here. Some of them were slow, but they're pretty much all starting to come out. Some of them don't have the big leaves that they will have later in the summer. But the ones that aren't showing signs of anything, go through just limb by limb and cut the limbs back by about half. If they are alive that high up, that will force them to come out, and they've still got the root system, you know, barring gopher damage of a mature plant, so they'll probably come out a lot faster. They'll probably catch up with the others, but that's what I will suggest to you. Certainly wouldn't hurt to douse the root system with a little Garrett juice and a little Super Thrive just to try to get them to put on new roots to replace anything that the gophers did damage.
Okay. I've got four gophers out of the yard so far this year, but I think there's a deterrent that has castor oil in it. That's not harmful in any way around vegetation or the trees, is it?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
And it's a deterrent more than it's a deterrent.
Right.
And it'll get them away from the area, and I've done that, so I haven't seen any activity by that tree in the last, you know, 3 or 4 months.
Very good.
I didn't know if the damage was terminal or not. You know what happened last November, October.
Yeah, and we're just going to have to wait and see. And I'm still a big fan of the snap traps. The fact that you're setting that trap below ground level, so no domestic animals are going to get into it. And I don't know, I used to be such a good gopher trapper when I worked with one of my professors in college, and I can't tell you how many gophers we trapped for the research that he was doing. And I'm sure the farmer who was letting us use his fields for experimenting was just as happy to have them gone, because those traps really, really do work well. And, you know, they're not just going somewhere else to cause problems. But, you know, whatever works for you guys is just great. The deterrents tend to work pretty well as long as the gophers have another place to go. Otherwise, it's kind of like the hungry deer. They're just going to tough it out and go after things they don't normally go after.
Okay. I've got a sago palm question on how big is too big to have in a pot? I say a pot, actually a molasses tub, but the trunk is about 18 inches tall, and I've repotted it twice in the last several months because it keeps leaning over.
Sure.
Is it time to put in the ground, or what? At what point do I need to do that?
Well, it never hurts a plant to be root-bound. That's a big, big misconception. Being root-bound will make a plant dry out a lot faster, and I always tell people, only two times you really need to repot a plant are either when it's gotten so top-heavy you can't keep it standing up, or when it's drying out so quickly you can't keep it watered. But you can grow an enormous sago in a pot, and it does not harm it at all to be root-bound, but you may get to the point that you're having to water it every day, and you may get tired of doing that. So Putting it in the ground is always an option. As I recall, you guys are a little further south, so you don't get quite as cold, as certainly as I do in the hill country, but not quite as cold as San Antonio. The big issue, of course, is freeze damage, and we went for 30 years with most virtually no freeze damage, and then we've had two out of the past 3 years, we've had severe freeze damage on Sago. So I don't know. I'm not crazy enough to try to forecast the weather. I'm hoping we will go back to more typical winters, but we're just going to have to wait and see.
Okay. Well, that takes care of two crises right now.
Well, hopefully the crises will abate a bit and you can get out and enjoy a wonderful Sunday, Terry. You guys have a wonderful day, and we will look forward to visit again.
I do too. Thank you, Bob.
You're sure welcome. Thank you. All right. We'll get back to phone calls momentarily. I get to talk to you about Fred Morales and Morales Feed. And gosh, I've known Fred for so many years, and his biggest fan, his mom. Fred's just a good guy, does so much for the community, but he's also one of the smartest men I know, and one of the men who really asks questions about what's wrong with ranching in South Texas. Why is it so much more difficult to get a good hay crop, growing row crops? Why do things just not always produce the way they used to? And he knows very well that the answer is the organic material in the soil has been burned out by too many years of synthetic nitrogen fertilizers. Well, Fred, being the entrepreneur that he is, has found a low-cost material, a low-cost compost, which can really help restore the organic material to your soil very quickly and very economically. And you don't even have to worry about the work, because Fred can spread it for you. Or if you want to sort of go halfway, he'll put it in a spreader, bring it to you. You can use your equipment to put it out, and then just bring the empty hopper back to him. It's a material that I don't really recommend for lawns and gardens, but on pastures, on hay fields, things like that, probably going to be one of the most economical sources you can use, and will certainly work faster than Mother Nature does at restoring the organic material to the soil, which we need so much to help hold the water in the soil, to help keep the plants more insect and disease free through my way of increasing the bricks in the sap. There's just so many good things that happen when you've got more organic material in the soil. Fred has a pretty good answer going. He probably ought to call Morales Feed and talk to him about it. And while you're at it, you might check out their K-Line irrigation products and all the other fine feed products they have. That's Morales Feed.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening and back to the phone line. Linda's first in line, then it'll be Megan. Have a couple of open lines. Those of y'all that forgot to set your clocks forward and you're just waking up, grab one of them at 210-599-5555 while I say good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
My sweet son bought me a magnolia tree.
Do you know whether it's a standard? There are three kinds of magnolias. One of them's called Little Jim, which is a little more compact, a little slower growing. Then there's your standard southern magnolia. Then there's what we call a deciduous magnolia or a flowering tulip tree. Which one were you fortunate enough to receive?
Do you know there is no tag on it? I don't know.
Okay. Big, glossy, glossy dark green leaves.
Yes, and they're not real big leaves.
Okay.
Like the standard magnolia is.
Yeah, well, that's probably the variety called Little Jim, G-E-M, and in my opinion, that's the best magnolia for our area.
What type of soil? We live 10 miles south of Seguin.
Okay. Well, you're in a great place then, because it, of course, likes soil that drains well. You probably will want to add some organic material in the form of compost. But okay. That magnolia should thrive for you. The one thing to remember about magnolias is their roots are fairly close to the surface, and they really like to have those roots cool. So as a young tree, keep a pretty good layer of mulch on the surface of the ground around the tree. And you almost have to let it grow its limbs low. That's what, if you've ever seen a really gorgeous magnolia. You see all these low limbs, and people don't like that because they can't put their picnic table underneath it or whatever else. But you almost have to accept the fact that you're going to need to let your magnolia keep its limbs fairly low to the ground just to shade the ground and keep it cooler if you want that magnolia to grow into a really beautiful tree. But other than that, just, you know, you don't take any special fertilizer, even though people would love to sell you something you don't need. Same good organic stuff you put on your grass and other shrubs and things will be just fine for the magnolia. And just water thoroughly whenever the soil's dry, an inch or so deep, and should be an easy tree for you to grow and a beautiful tree. The little gem has the same big white flowers that your southern magnolia does. It just doesn't take up quite as much of your yard as it matures.
Yeah, I'm from East Texas, so I love magnolias. So.
Well, I was born in Tyler quite a few years ago, so I know about beautiful magnolias and some of those other things we don't do so well with, like azaleas and things like that. But you should get to enjoy a little bit of the piney woods feeling with your magnolia.
I was also born in Tyler.
Okay.
On Broadway.
Yeah, I only lived there till I was 7, so I have a few memories of it, but they're not quite as bold as some of the later ones are. Let's just put it that way.
Okay. Thank you so much. You have a blessed day.
You do the same. Appreciate the call. Next in line is Megan. Good morning, Megan.
Good morning. How are you?
The day's off to a good start, and I am looking forward to it. I know there are a lot of people that don't like savings, but I do because I have so many evening chores. So this is actually one of my favorite days of the year.
Ah, there you go. Well, I have a question. I have a bur oak that's, I don't know, 8 years old or something like that. But I live in the country, and I have a lot of barn cats, and they seem to be favoring scratching on that tree. Is that hurting anything, or is there a way to protect the trunk? Or
how big in diameter is the trunk?
You know, it's probably about 10 inches or bigger.
Okay. If it is, and it's right at that kind of in-between size between having a smooth bark and having a really rough bark, if it's gotten to the really rough bark stage, probably not going to bother a thing. If they really are taking a lot of the bark off and it's down to a smoother wood, then I would encourage the barn cats to go elsewhere. And all you really need to do is, you know, you can take a piece of metal flashing and just, you know, wrap it around. I have my home's over 100 years old, and I've still got some of the old wood-burning stoves. And I periodically have to replace the stove pipes that go up. And you go to a good hardware store and get a 2-foot piece of stove pipe that just opens along the back. Just take one or two of those and wrap it around the trunk. It probably won't even have to, you know, attach it. It's just the tensile strength of it will hold it up there, and that'll stop them scratching on that very well.
Okay. Yeah, I was kind of thinking I have some homemade tomato cages that I could just clip and put around there too, probably.
You could. The stovepipe is just cheap and easy, and I use my tomato cages for other things like tomatoes.
I'm not good at that, so they're just sitting here.
Well, then the problem is, of course, that and if yours are homemade, you know, you may be able to open one side. If you have those really well-made ones from the Texas Tomato Cage Company, there's no way to open it up without cutting it. And I'd hate to do that to a $40 cage, but, you know, whatever works well for you. I just suggest a stovepipe because it's cheap and easy.
Sure. Okay. Also, I have some fig trees that have got to be just done away with because they're in the shade and they're just not producing. But they are, you know, special ones from family members. So how do I do fig cuttings?
Well, are your fig trees pretty much bushes? Do they have some low branches?
Oh, yeah, they're bushy.
Okay. Well, if you want the easiest way to do fig cuttings, take one or two or three or four of those lower branches, take your knife and slice the bark off, just, you know, not too deeply into wood, but just make a slice in the bark on the bottom and pin that limb down to the ground. You can put a rock on the end of it. You can take a coat hanger and bend it into a U, pin that limb down to the ground, and just put a couple of shovelfuls of dirt over the top of it and forget about it for 6 or 8 weeks. This is what is called a layer, L-A-Y-E-R, and the fig tree is going to produce roots down in the ground. You can go back, say, 1st of June or something like that. I think you'll find that they're well-rooted. You just cut that limb, dig it up with those roots, and replant it wherever you like. Now, if for whatever reason that doesn't appeal, you can do what we call an air layer, L-A-Y-E-R, and that would mean that you would take some of the upper growth, you'd move, take a limb, move maybe a foot back in from the end of it, do the same slice of the bark off one side of it, and then this material we call long-fibered sphagnum moss, which is what we use to line metal hanging baskets and things, just moisten a handful of that, wrap a clump of that around the spot that you cut, and then wrap it up. I use aluminum foil just because it's easy to put on there, and then just crimp the ends of it. Some people will use plastic wrap because they want to be able to see what's happening. But in either case, given about 6 weeks of warm weather, the tree will produce lots of roots down into that little clump of moist sphagnum, and it's the same way. When you take the foil off, take the plastic off, and you find that that sphagnum seems like it's well attached and has a lot of roots in it, then you just snip behind that, and you've got your pre-rooted cutting. Now, there are ways to actually directly take cuttings, but as we're getting into the warmer part of the year, either an air layer or a regular layer is just 100% successful, very little work, and very easy to do.
Okay, I'm going to repeat that real quick. Take a lower branch, kind of thinly slice the bark off, pin it to the ground.
On the bottom side of the branch only, not all the way around. Yeah.
Oh, on the bottom side of the branch. Okay.
Yeah.
And then pin it down. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, I'm writing real quick. And then just pin it down, and I just do the regular watering of the fig trees like I usually do.
Well, after you pin it down, put a couple of shovelfuls of dirt over that spot that you cut. And then just do the regular watering, regular fertilizing. Just treat it like you always have. If the fig tree had a brain, something would be saying to it, oh, look, one of my lower limbs is broken. I think I should put down some roots and form a new plant. And you'll be amazed what a good root system. I mean, you know, 60 years ago when my grandfather was, or maybe longer than that, 80 years ago when my grandfather was growing plants for Sears Roebuck and shipping them all over the United States, that's how they propagated most woody shrubs.
Ah, okay. So I take one of these lower branches. So they're kind of long. Do I do it out closer to the end of the branch? Or
Whatever is easiest for you. I would try to do it within 2 feet of the end of the branch. So that's just going to give you a real nice little rooted fig tree to replant or give to a family member or whatever to perpetuate the plant. But I would go toward the end of the branch. Doesn't have to be right at the end, but, you know, 18, 24 inches back from the end would be ideal.
Okay. And then, so when it's time to cut it off and replant it, do you take that branch and stand it up, or you keep the, I mean, the roots are going to be on the bottom side of
sure.
it. So you
can
lay that branch.
You can turn it upright. It'll look a little funny for the first few weeks, but gravity tells the plant how to grow its branches, and it'll start producing upright branches just like one that you went out and paid a bunch of money for at the nursery, only yours was free.
Okay, but you absolutely take wherever the roots have formed, that's got to go in the soil.
Yes, that needs to go in the ground.
Okay.
And it just won't miss a beat. It'll just take off and grow. You'll be amazed at how quickly it'll grow.
Perfect. I have peaches and plums that have bloomed and already have fruit.
Uh-huh.
And what do I fertilize them with? I actually yesterday fertilized them with the Medina Growing Green. I was just out doing stuff. Is that good enough for now?
That's all they need, Medina Growing Green. And if you had real young trees that you were really trying to encourage a bunch of growth, I might use a little bit of Medina Has to Grow Plant on them. But that same Growing Green fertilizer you put on your other shrubs and trees and vegetable garden, your fruit trees will love it.
Okay. One last quick question. I'm making some new flower beds. I live south of Floresville. And so what kind of compost mix or whatever should I put on there?
Well, I don't like biosolids compost. There's just, it's not that it's human waste. It's just there's so many pharmaceuticals and chemicals and things in it. But any kind of manure compost, mushroom compost, whatever you can find is going to be just fine. Just kind of blend it into the soil and you should do extremely well.
And then just put a bunch of mulch on top, right?
And plant your plants, put a bunch of mulch on top and sit back and look at how beautiful it is.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Great questions. Good to talk to you, Megan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye. All right, let's talk for a minute, and then we'll get back to phone calls. I get to talk about Dr. Mark Williamson. Just, you know, I love talking about good people, and Dr. Williamson is just one of the best. When it comes to dentists, you're just not going to find. I'm sure there are some other dentists out there, but Dr. Williamson is just the guy who does it the old-fashioned way. Now, he is highly trained. He's probably the most diversely trained dentist in the area, where lots of dentists want to ship you out to a specialist if you need anything more than a cleaning or a filling. Dr. Williamson can take care of you right there in the chair in his office. And what a nice atmosphere it is in the office. You know, I guess nobody really looks forward to going to the dentist, but it'll be a much more pleasurable experience than perhaps you've had in the past. You're really among friends, and that's the feeling you'll get the minute you walk into Dr. Williamson's office. They're just among the kindest, caring people, most caring people you're ever going to meet. You're not going to be rushed through. He's not looking down the road at the next patient. He's looking at taking care of your needs. He wants to know you. He wants to know your family. He wants to be your friend as well as your dentist, and that's pretty rare in today's world. And he is one of the most highly trained, one of the best dentists you'll find out there. Carrying on the work of Dr. Ed Staffel, he also does sedation dentistry. If you have concerns about dental work, shall we say, he'll make you comfortable. It's just, he's right conveniently located there in Northwest San Antonio on Cherry Ridge Drive, just outside Loop 410, just east of I-10 out there. Easy to find, great people, quality dental work, just the kind of dentist you would enjoy knowing. If you're looking for a new dentist, if you've just moved to the area and want to start out with one of the very best, you look for Dr. Williamson and Associates. The number is 210-341-2569. Know that by heart. 210-341-2569 for Dr. Williamson and Associates.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. Don tells me we've still got some open lines, which is unusual on a Sunday. I think there's just a lot of folks out there forgot to set those clocks forward and just a little slow getting their day started. But if you want to grab an open line, you know the number, 210-599-5555. And in the meantime, I believe Ann is next in line. So good morning, Ann.
Good morning. I'm looking for shrubs for privacy.
Okay.
They need to be evergreen with fairly thick foliage, can grow up to, say, 5 feet and maybe three to four feet wide.
Okay. And what area do you live in?
I live out of Comfort.
Okay. And is this screened so the deer can't get in, or do they have to be deer-proof?
No, they don't. The deer can't get to them. It's mostly for privacy from the road.
Okay, very good. Well, and is this an area that you're going to be able to water without any problem?
Yes.
Okay. One of the fastest growing shrubs that is dense, that almost soundproofs things as well as sightproof things, you know, is the loquat. And now loquat suffered some damage 2 years ago, but it had been 30 years since we've seen any damage to them before. So I'm not going to rule out loquats. They're one of the fastest growing, reasonably priced things. If you can find some in like in 1 gallon containers, you will have your full dense hedge within a couple of years. If you can dig a bigger hole and spend a little bit more money, if you get them in a 5 or even a 15 gallon container, you will have your hedge by the end of the summer. But that is one of the fastest growing, one of the densest ones. Now, had you told me you had deer, I would tell you to look at what is called a Pride of Houston Yaupon Holly. All the Yaupons are good, but Pride of Houston is just an exceptionally dense one. It's pretty much deer-proof. The leaves are smaller, and you don't get quite the same sound suppression, but you get pretty good visual suppression. Doesn't grow as fast, but, you know, it's certainly a good potential choice. Another choice, although it's not so fast-growing, mountain laurels grow beautifully around Comfort, and that would make a nice barrier screen that's going to ultimately grow somewhere 8 to 10 feet tall, and mountain laurels have very little, if any, trouble with the cold. So my number one thought would probably be loquat, but if you decide you want to go with something more native, then either Yaupon holly or mountain laurel will be other choices.
And with the loquat, because we're looking for something that's about five to six feet tall.
So it's going to get a little taller than that. It's going to want to grow more like 8 feet, but if you cut it back once a year to keep the size down, it'll just make it fuller and prettier.
Okay, so that's the loquat and the, okay.
What about up to 6 feet?
Do you have anything that would go up to 6 feet?
Another possibility, although it's not quite as dense, there's a plant called Abelia, A-B-E-L-I-A, has white flowers in the summer. The standard form grows 6 to 8 feet tall. There are a couple of them in front of my house that are probably close to 100 years old. So they are very long-lived. My house is about 110 years old and maybe even a little older than that. And I suspect they were planted very shortly after the house was built. So Abelia, A-B-E-L-I-A, gives you the advantage of flowers as well as something right in that size that you're looking for, but it's not going to be as dense. The loquat's just going to be a green wall. It's just going to be a green barrier, and some of these other things are, you know, going to be a little bit more open, but Abelia would certainly be another possibility. There's also a native plant called evergreen sumac, which grows all over my ranch. I live just a few miles south and west of you. I live west of Bernie, and I have evergreen sumac grows all over the, you know, hills on my ranch, and it makes a nice evergreen shrub. Not quite as dense, but it's going to grow somewhere 5 to 8 feet in height, and real pretty shrub. It's just it's going to give you a nice barrier, but it's not going to be just that dense green wall.
Okay, well, I really do thank you for all you do and for this information.
Well, you get out and take a look at all those different plants we've talked about and pick the one that works best in your situations. And if you have any more questions, you know where to find me, Ann. I appreciate the call this morning. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Certainly. Goodbye. All right, let's pause for a minute and talk about Wild Birds Unlimited. You know, I was out the other day visiting with Kyle and the staff out there, and it's just a fun place to go visit. Even if you don't think you need anything, do what I do. Stop in periodically and just see what's new. They have the very best in birding supplies, of course, but so much more. Great optics at reasonable prices, binoculars and things I'm talking about. They have all sorts of beautiful gift merchandise as well, from wind chimes to bird baths to things, just yard art, so to speak. And when it comes to feeding the birds, boy, they've got everything you could be looking for. They always have things for the right season. You know, most people don't even realize that birds eat different seeds winter and summer, and their diet changes. The seed eaters and the fruit eaters, I could go on and on talking about birds, but I'd rather let you talk to Kyle and his staff out there, because honestly, they know more about it than I do. If you've been hoping to attract purple martins, you need to get those houses up immediately. Houses or gourds, however you choose to go, they need to be up because the scouts are already arriving. And if you're just enjoying the beautiful migrating birds, if you're looking forward to the full arrival of the hummingbirds, there are a few of them out there now. They've got the feeders that have the built-in ant stoppers. They've got Oh, they can put things on the top of the feeder that'll keep the raccoons and other things away from the seed. It's just your complete bird store and so much more. They're out there in the shopping center at the corner of Hebner Road and Northwest Military, kind of on the side that faces Northwest Military. You would always enjoy a visit. If you have questions, feel free to give them a call. 479-BIRD, that's area code 210. 479-BIRD. Say hello to my friends at Wild Birds Unlimited.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right, back to gardening. We're going to talk a little more with Clint and then Kathy and then Chris. Yeah, Clint, I'm sorry. I wasn't watching the clock closely enough. And when that national news thing comes on, I got to get out. It just was my fault. I just wasn't looking closely enough because I was concentrating on your good question. So let's keep going.
Oh, no worries on that. Now, the kumquat and loquat, do they need cross-pollinators?
No, the kumquats are self-pollinating, as are the loquats. They are insect pollinated, so they need pollinators. They need bees or wasps or flies or whatever, but they don't require a second plant. Now, one thing I would tell you about kumquats, be sure you get the one that you like. The one that I like is called Miwa, M-E-I-W-A, and it's a sweet kumquat. There's also a sour kumquat out there for people that like a little bit more tartness, but I think the Miwa is just, it's just absolutely delicious. It's one of those things that you can walk out and we had a customer here in San Antonio who had delightful older lady had one of these in her front yard that's probably 5 feet tall, and I don't think I ever made a delivery to her house that there weren't 100 or more kumquats out there just about ready to pick. So fun little citrus tree for you to grow.
How do you spell that one? Miwa?
Yeah, M-E-M as in Mike, E-I-W-A.
Miwa kumquat.
Miwa. Yeah, a lot of these things are Asian, and consequently they have names that don't roll off our Anglo tongues quite as easily as they might. But yep. Miwa is a very good sweet kumquat.
Okay. Now, on the NOLO, any word on that stuff coming back yet this year?
Have not heard back. We are searching and trying to get hold of the people that made it. We're also trying to get another company that produces lots of beneficials to look into producing it as well, but haven't heard back yet. I'll let you know as soon as we do.
I'm getting move-in notice from every grasshopper in the county, and so I want to try to get something for them before they get here.
I am with you 100% because it's somehow the cold weather never seems to get rid of the varmints, but it seems to have an effect on a lot of the natural suppressants out there. So, we need all the help we can get to fight grasshoppers this coming year. And the NOLO is sure one of the best things. Beyond that, I'll encourage you to put up bird feeders because it's amazing how many grasshoppers those birds eat, especially in nesting season.
Now, the bacteria in the NOLO, is that, can you buy that anywhere?
I don't know where. Nosema locustri, which is where the name NOLO comes from. And it's obviously something that occurs naturally, just not in large quantities. But I've not discovered anywhere that one's available. It's just a matter, I'm sure, of having the technique down of growing and reproducing it. And that's what I'm saying. I'm hoping if these older folks that have produced it for years, if that's just more work than they want to do, I'm hoping that we can maybe even get the company that produces our beneficial nematodes, which change hands, by the way, but the quality is just the same, if not better. But I'm hoping we can interest them in producing the NOLO, but haven't heard back yet.
Good deal. Okay, well, I appreciate your time.
Well, I appreciate your call. You get out and have a good Sunday, and we'll move on and talk to Kathy. Good morning, Kathy.
I'm the one that had called about our mountain laurels that we wanted to plant. We're just west of Bernie, across
right.
46 from you. And we did the percolation test, and the water drained in 5 to 10 minutes. So,
oh, excellent. Excellent.
And I wanted to ask you, when we were pulling them out of the pot, there were a lot of ants about on one of them about a third of the way down. Mm-hmm. And so my husband sprayed, he did the spinosad. And they had already started going inside even deeper. You know, when we disturb them, they seem to be right between the container and the dirt.
Right.
And, but by the time he could get the spinosad out, and I don't even know if that spinosad was going to be effective on them, but that's all we had at the time.
Sure, and it is a very good ant killer. It doesn't kill them instantly, but it's probably the best and safest thing. If we had talked beforehand, I might have suggested starting with some DE and then following it up with spinosad, but he did just fine with the spinosad. If you see any sign of the ants over the next couple of weeks that he didn't get all of them with the spinosad, get some of the bait, the come and get it bait, which is actually a spinosad-based bait. And I just, you know, since we've just transplanted one of the more delicate plants in the world when it comes to transplanting, I'm not going to suggest the orange oil drench like we do in some cases. I'm going to tell you that probably just the bait is going to be all you need to do to take care of them.
Okay, I was afraid of that, and that's why I was going to ask you today, would it be safe to do the orange oil like you've talked about before, but... Okay,
probably, but the Mount Laurel is second only to the Madrone in being hard to transplant successfully. So I'm not going to put on anything that might even be mildly toxic to the roots, but I think the spinosad bait will do the same job. You could also, and of course, it only works when it's dry, but you could dust the area around with the diatomaceous earth. It's inexpensive, safe, easy to use, and takes care of any kind of insect that has a hard shell, like a flea or a fire ant, or you know, lots of the damaging beetles and things like that. So it's your other option, and because it has a shelf life of about 100,000 years, it's not a bad product. You just have a little bit of it on the shelf. We mix it with you know, our cattle cubes and things like that, because totally different process. In fact, Bruce Dooley's daughter is one that did some of the research on it, but it's also a great wormer if you have cattle or just about any other kind of animals. We sprinkle some DE on the cubes periodically, and it's just a good product, and you just have to be sure you get the one, the what they call the food grade. You don't want to use the one they use for filtering, because it's been heat treated, which not only makes it not as effective for the insects, but makes it dangerous to breathe. But the food grade, the kind of stuff you buy at the nursery, is safe to use and very good at killing ants.
Okay, and we supplemented our soil to build up berms and so forth, mm-hmm. to have a good planting area out there with the Texas Native. It's a composted manure. The brand is Texas Native, but it's composted mm-hmm. manure enriched topsoil.
Uh-huh.
And I was concerned, though, about whether or not it would make the environment for that Mount Laurel too good, and it wouldn't want to grow its roots out.
No, it's going to be fine. What kind of, do you know what kind of manure is in this product, whether it's cattle or horse or chicken?
Cattle.
I'm always a little concerned because there is so much picloram out there, and cattle that eat hay that's been sprayed with picloram, the picloram is present in the manure, and if it's too strong, that can cause a problem with almost anything. Picloram kills everything except grass, and there's just nothing in nature that breaks it down. So you're probably fine, but in the future, if it's not a brand that you know really well, what I always suggest is do a little picloram test, and you do that by taking a 5-gallon bucket, putting 6 inches of compost in the bottom, fill the bucket with the water, let it soak for a day or so, and then go and pour that water over any kind of broadleaf weed. It could be a dandelion, could be henbit, can't be grass because picloram doesn't kill grass, but over any kind of broadleaf weed or a tomato plant for that matter. If the weed, tomato, whatever, continues to grow, you'll know there's no picloram in the compost. If the weed starts having brown edges to the leaves and not looking so good, well, you know that batch of compost is picloram contaminated. You have to be very careful about
where you use it or whether you take it back where you got it. But you're probably totally safe, but I just say that for the benefit of everybody thinking about getting compost. The material that's poultry litter based, you never have to worry about that because obviously chickens don't eat, turkeys don't eat hay, but cattle and horses do, and a lot of people just aren't aware of that potential problem.
Okay, very good. And we had gotten, a few years ago, we had ordered from what was then Stone and Soil. We had a lot of soil brought in and a lot of Bermuda grass seeds and everything. So when I ordered some dump truck loads of other soil, I got the sterilized one.
Uh-huh.
And nothing rose in it. I mean, there's not one weed, not anything. And we uh-huh. only used the berm one tree. The tree has been fine the last couple of years. It seems to be growing, but I didn't know if that sterilized soil was treated with something to kill the weeds that makes it...
Yeah, that's a great question, but most of the time when you have soil that's sterilized, it's sterilized by covering it with something and letting the sun take care of the sterilization. To the best of my knowledge, and Site One, of course, has taken over Stone and Soil, I don't think they use anything that is chemically sterilized. I think I've got to find out if Courtney is still out there at the one on I-10, because that lady, one of the smartest people I know and just one of the nicest people, too, she would tell us anything about that. But I think anything they tell you that is sterilized is strictly heat sterilized and not anything you have to worry about.
Good deal. Very good. And the tree did survive. So, and it was quite tall. It was like a, 15 feet or more tree.
Good.
About a 3 to 4 inch trunk. And yeah. It has done well, but I was afraid to use it on anything else when I saw not one weed ever grew out in that.
Well, once again, you can do the same kind of test to be sure there's not any chemical in it, but they, of course, want to do the least expensive thing possible. And we have plenty of heat in Texas, especially in the summer months. So they cover it, probably turn it a time or two, and just let Mother Nature take care of the sterilization. And if I talk to Courtney, I'll verify that for you. But I'm pretty sure that's what they do, and absolutely no concerns there. But you could do the same picloram test if you wanted to, but I kind of doubt it's necessary.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Have a good day.
You do the same, and I'll look forward to our next visit. Chris, hang on just a second. I need to talk about Southwest Metal Roofing Systems here for a minute. And once again, that's such a pleasure. I've got to give Danny a call and ask him about a couple of other things, talk to him about some new roofing that I probably am going to need to get done. Certainly not replacing anything that Southwest Metal Roofing has done for me before, because I don't know, it's been a lot of years since they put the roof on my home, and it's still perfect. It's been a lot of years since they put the roof on Shades of Green. To replace that old roof from another roofer that didn't stand behind his warranty, oh, I just love Southwest Metal Roofing Systems. They give you the best warranty in the industry because they never have to do anything. My home is complex. They had to put a roof around three chimneys, around a balcony, around three sides of the house upstairs. Lots of hips and valleys. Not an easy job, but I've not called them once for a problem with it. It's just the way they work. Best metal in the industry and the best workmanship in the industry, in my opinion. My roof has stood up to high winds, to hail, to just about everything Mother Nature throws at it. Here at the nursery, it had hail the size of baseballs that didn't harm our roof. Southwest Metal Roofing Systems is the company that I recommend. Reasonably priced, very top quality. They do new construction as well. If you're building a new home, just tell your builder you want Southwest Metal Roofing Systems to put the roof on. That's what we do with our groundwater office up in Bernie. Best roof you've ever seen. It's energy efficient. Their roofs will save you money on your utility bills every month. Many insurance companies give you a discount because they know they're not going to have to pay for claims. What else are you looking for? It's quality, lots of choices in colors and actual material styles. To learn more, you just give them a call, 210-822-6868. It's 210-822-6868 for Southwest Metal Roofing Systems.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 1071.
All right, back to gardening. My next two callers are Chris and Angie. Chris is first in line. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going well. How about yourself?
Good. I've always wanted to talk to you. You've got a great show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Glad you made it in this morning.
Unfortunately, somebody stole my thunder because about the kumquat issue. I've been waiting a very long time to ask that question, too, to believe it or not. But in Del Rio, these trees grow 15 to 20 feet tall. And I've only known the Spanish word called anaqua.
Now, anaqua, there's a whole different tree which is properly called anaqua. The anaqua that I know is common name is sandpaper tree, and they're in bloom right now, white flowers, and but they have super, super rough leaves. The kumquat has a leaf which looks much more like a lemon or probably more like a lime tree. So talking about the same tree, but a different tree that I know by the name of anaqua.
I'll describe it. Before the color comes into the fruit, it's green, but when you break it, like a white milk comes from it, from the fruit itself. But when it's ready to go, it'll turn from like a sunlight yellow to a nice, beautiful, bright orange.
And is the fruit about the size of a ping pong ball?
Yeah, they're sweet.
That's almost certainly.
When I was little.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the tree grew in his yard, but the overhang came into our yard. So whenever it bloomed, I was there in the backyard eating them as much as I could.
Well, that is a true citrus kumquat. And what I know as anaqua is a different tree, but my Spanish isn't as good as yours. So I did not realize that was a word for it. But no, the anaquas are a beautiful native tree, and they're in San Antonio, at least, they're in bloom all over the neighborhoods around, but the difference, the one you're describing should have a very smooth leaf if you were to rub it. The anaqua that I know by that name, they call it sandpaper tree because that leaf feels like sandpaper. It's so rough. So trees. Yeah, two good trees.
They're prone to like caterpillars, the ones that grow the webs in them, and we have to spray for them a lot, but they're pretty tall trees. I had another question too.
Sure.
I know, like around when the pandemic came a few years ago, we were getting seeds in the mail. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah.
And they were coming Mylar bags, and I think they were trying to get them past the airport by putting mine came in a cell phone case and a Mylar bag. And I've never seen these seeds before, but I remember in college doing research papers that you could inoculate diseases in seeds, and of the two ones were blight and Bacillus anthraxis, and I never planted the seeds, but I feared that if they got thrown away or sent to the dump, that eventually, you know, they might open and something may come of that. But you'd probably use an electron microscope to figure out if there was something put in the plant seed itself.
Even then, it would be difficult. That was my graduate school specialty, was electron microscopy. But yeah, that was a time that I'm just as glad is behind us now. And hopefully a lot of lessons were learned and we won't ever have to revisit that. There'll be plenty of crises happen, you know, hopefully we live long enough to see such things. But, it was a very different time and had a very profound impact on our way of life. So we're still seeing interesting things from it.
Now, you said the sandpaper tree had more of a rougher.
Yeah, very, very rough leaf. Very, very rough, almost a gray-green leaf.
How are the shape of the leaf? Is it like an oval or jagged?
It's fairly smooth edged. It does the margins of the leaf are fairly smooth. It's slightly elongated. It's not all that different from the kumquat, but it would look. Oh golly, I'm trying to think what I could compare it to. There's another shrub called Eleagnus. Is probably what the leaf looks most like. As far as both texture and all, but no, if you just rub that leaf, you'll know in a hurry which one it is, it feels like sandpaper. It's so rough.
Okay. I think that's what it is. Now, have you ever heard of the name Chinese plum as well?
Chinese plum is the loquat. That is a common name for a loquat. Botanical name is Erythobotryra, something like that. Erythobotryra. And that's what is usually called Chinese plum, which is a whole different plant, Erythobotryra tobira.
I appreciate your time. Thank you for your knowledge.
Well, I'm glad you made it through today. Please don't hesitate to call anytime we have something fun to discuss like that. You have a wonderful day.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. All right, Angie, let me get a quick break in here so we don't have to rush. I get to talk about Medina Agriculture. Oh, how much do I like Medina Agriculture? I ordered 16 tons or 18 tons, either 16 or 18 tons of fertilizer from Stewart just a couple of days ago. We really believe in their products. They're growing green fertilizer, their liquid fertilizers, the has-to-grow products, and all the other fine things that they package. They're just quality products. They're natural products. Some of them, like the Growing Green, is certified organic. So if you've got an organic production operation, it's the kind of fertilizer you have to use. But all of Medina's products are natural and work with nature then, rather than against nature. That's what they've built their business. That's what they've built their reputation on, helping homeowners with small parcels to ranchers and landowners with hundreds and thousands of acres. Medina has worked worldwide, and this is one thing they don't talk about, but I'm happy to talk about. They've worked all over the world in bioremediation. They've changed and saved the lives of just countless numbers of people, whether it's cleaning up mining operations in old Russia, whether it's cleaning up some chemical spills in China. Medina is your partner out there working worldwide to make people's lives better, working hard right here at home to provide you with the gardening products that will make your life better. That's the kind of people I like to talk about, the kind of people I like to do business with, and why the reason I'm so happy to speak for Medina Agriculture. You're going to find their products at fine nurseries and garden centers everywhere. They work. They just don't, they don't do any good if they're still sitting in the bottle or in the bag. So if you've gone out and gotten your fertilizer or gotten your has to grow, put it on those plants and watch for the results. Good people in our area for going on 60 years now. Medina Agriculture.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening on a beautiful Sunday morning out there. Golly, trees coming out. I see leaf buds all over them, blue sky out there, a nursery full of beautiful blooming plants. Sorry, Don, I know the studio's where you have to be, but I sure do enjoy sitting here looking out at what a beautiful day it is. And it is going to be a great day for gardening. And if you have questions about that, give us a call. Don tells me we have a couple of open lines. You know the number, 210-599-5555. And next in line is Angie. Good morning, Angie.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning. It's just a gorgeous day, and I'm looking forward to getting home with some daylight this evening. So I know not everybody likes daylight savings, but I do. So it's one of my favorite days of the year. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay, it sure is. Well, the question I have is I need a hedge for privacy along a street. Mm-hmm. And I have had oleanders there. And, of course, 2 years ago they all froze and I took them out. And then I planted new ones. But even the new ones this year are struggling, and so I think maybe I need to start over. And you were talking to someone about shumac earlier, and maybe a hedge I could use. We do have deer out here. We're in Hollywood Park.
Okay.
And so I was just wondering if you could help me.
If I were going to pick, and your deer in Hollywood Park are the ravenous. You just got way too many of them. And I'm afraid that where you have that many, evergreen sumac might even be on their dietary list. There is a really beautiful plant, which is called Yaupon holly. Beautiful red berries in the winter months. Its botanical name is Ilex vomitoria. Not very pleasant, but that's the reaction it apparently produces if consumed. So the deer tend to leave it alone. There is a very dense variety that makes a very good privacy screen called Pride of Houston. And it will be one of the things that I recommend most highly to you. Not super fast growing. If you want something that grows a little bit faster, that's going to get 5-6 feet in height, there is a type of viburnum. A common name of it is Sandanqua. I have no idea where that name comes from. It's properly called Viburnum suspensum. Has a very rough leaf. Has kind of an unusual odor to it if you crush the leaf. But I think it's the most common shrub in Fair Oaks, and that's one of the other places where they just are so overrun with deer. But if you're looking for a moderately fast-growing
deer, pretty much deer proof, not just deer resistant shrub, but I would look real carefully at Viburnum suspensum. Now, it suffered some damage in the super severe winter. I think most of them did come back out, so I can't tell you it's 100% freeze proof. The Yopon suffered no damage whatsoever, by the way. But if you're looking for a denser hedge that will get fairly good sized fairly quickly, I would sure put Viburnum suspensum on your consideration list.
Okay, can you spell that for me, please?
Well, the Viburnum is V-I-B-U-R-N-U-M, and the species name is suspensum, S-U-S-P-E-N-S-U-M. The common name, and, you know, I don't know why, to me it's worse than the botanical name, but it's called Sandanqua, S-A-N-D-A-N-K-W-A, I believe. One of my favorite quotes, and I love quotes, is Mark Twain said, it's a sign of a very limited intellect if a man can only spell a word one way. So I probably spell Sandanqua different ways, but I think that's the correct way to spell it.
Okay. Well, do you have those at your nursery?
We have some fairly large ones that arrived yesterday. Day before yesterday, we had about 40 of them. Yesterday, we had about two of them. I expect that we'll have more in the five-gallon size early this next week. It's one we try to keep all the time, but nursery business, let's just say it has been a little busy the past couple of weeks, and a lot of things are going out. So call before you come, but I anticipate probably Tuesday or Wednesday we'll have plenty more of them.
Okay. Well, thank you very, very much.
Take a look at it. I truly think it's probably going to be your best bet, but if you come by here, ask to look at that Yopon too. We've got one that's been planted here probably 20 years. We trimmed it up into a tree just because we couldn't give up enough space for it to be a, you know, to be a dense shrub all the way to the ground. But there's one of those planted in the ground here, and you can see what a fully mature specimen looks like. But those are going to be two of the very best. There is another form I will just tell you about of Yopon holly, which is called weeping Yopon holly. And it has all the same good characteristics, but the individual plants are just works of art. The limbs just go at all sorts of interesting pendulous angles. We don't have any of those yet this spring, but just if you're looking for something else fun for your yard that is very deer tolerant, take a look at weeping Yopon holly sometime too.
Okay. Well, so you have 5 gallon. Do you have smaller sizes, or do you ever get like 1 gallon or anything?
I'll tell you, in all honesty, the growers can charge more for bigger plants. So the little ones, most of the growers are just potting them up as fast as they can into bigger pots so they can charge us more for them. We sometimes get them, but ever since COVID, ever since the big freezes, the 1 gallons have been much harder to find. But again, I actually go out and handpick a lot of the merchandise comes in the nursery. I'll look and see if there are any 1 gallons available.
Well, how tall does this verbenum get?
About 5 to 6 feet.
5 to 6. And the Yopon holly gets?
Up to 10 to 12.
10 to 12. Okay.
But you can always pruning. Pruning shears are made for adjusting heights if you need to. And it's fine to prune either one of those as well.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Angie. Thank you. Appreciate the call this morning. Janice and Melissa are next in line, but I guess we probably ought to, well, let me go ahead and talk to Janice, and then we'll take a little break here. Good morning, Janice. I hear you there. Are you there, Janice?
Yes, I am.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have one quick question.
Okay.
All this pollen that is coming off our oak trees, is it detrimental to your grass and your flower beds?
No, if anything, it's beneficial. The nature of pollen, it has a lot of proteinaceous, a lot of protein materials in it, which means it has nitrogen, which means it actually has some fertilizer quality. And since plants don't get allergies, there's not anything. I mean, it's a mess on my windshields in the morning, but there's nothing negative about it from a plant standpoint.
Oh, okay, great. Well, I'm just going to till it in then.
That's a good thing to do. Just wear your dust mask while you're tilling in so you're not breathing too much of it, or you're going to be heading over to see my friend Rhonda for some of that seasonal allergy relief.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're sure welcome. Thank you. All right, let's go ahead and talk to Melissa. Open a couple of more lines up. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a quick question. I raise chickens, and I want something that will grow under trees that they can go and hide under, and like a shrub or bush or something I can plan on about 2 acres of area.
Okay. Do you have deer? Are the areas you said under the trees, so it's going to be fairly shady?
Yeah, it's fairly shady. I have a lot of cedar, elm, post oaks, live oaks. And I'm in Parker County.
Okay. One thing that I would look at, now this plant does like to spread, but there is a plant out there called primrose jasmine. Nothing toxic about it. Nothing's going to hurt your chicken. And it makes sort of a bushy plant that's going to get 3 or 4 feet tall, but it has branches that extend outward 3 or 4 feet. Everywhere the branch touches the ground, it takes root, and then it will jump another 3 or 4 feet a couple of years later. So this is one that periodically you'll get out there with your pruning shears and your grubbing hoe. It's one that I say give it an inch and it'll take a yard, your yard. So it doesn't reproduce by seed, so it's not going to really be invasive. But I have them in my yard, and every 3 or 4 years I go through and clip back the longer limbs and take my grubbing hoe and just grub out all the places that it's taken root. But it's dense, but I've had puppy dogs like to stay under it and lie in the shade, and I think it'd be pretty much ideal for the chickens to have a place to get away from the hawks and get out of the sun if they want to. So that would be
perfect.
Yeah, I think that would be one of your best choices. Other things that would have potential to grow that way. There's a native plant called American Beauty Berry. It doesn't really spread out as much, but it's a beautiful plant and grows well in the shade, has a pink flower in the spring, and then berries turn bright red in the fall. Actually, another one that might be even better than Beauty Berry, there's one called Turk's Cap. Once again, it's upright, but it kind of grows in a big clump. I've got both the pink and the white form in my backyard, and it just makes a dense mass that animals could get in and around. But I think my number one choice is still going to be the primrose jasmine.
It does sound perfect. Right now I have a cedar tree that they love to get underneath.
Sure, sure. Cedar trees can have mites and other things that might be problematic to chickens. I don't think you'll have that problem with primrose jasmine. And primrose jasmine will actually give you some beautiful yellow flowers in the spring as well.
Sounds perfect. Thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for the call this morning.
Goodbye.
All right, Don, let's get a break in here. I don't have any more live, so run those recordings and we'll get back to gardening.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. Looks like Carol and Natalie are going to be my next two callers, and Carol's first in line. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I live in the older part of Schertz. I have a yard that's about 48 years old. It's looking terrible. Major, major, big bare spots. I do have the lawn mowed, but it's just mostly bare, and the noxine just doesn't want to grow many places there anymore. Can you suggest what I could get someone to do to renovate this yard?
The best thing that you could do for a yard like that, and I can't tell you for sure without seeing it, but the single best thing, if you already have St. Augustine, number one, put some good organic fertilizer on, but more importantly than that even, get somebody to spread about a half, quarter to half an inch deep compost over it. I've just never seen anything that revitalizes a yard and helps the grass grow back into bare areas than just good compost. You've got, and Stone and Soil changed their name to, I think, Site One now, and you've got a location out on I-35 that's not too terribly far from you, that where you could probably get this. If you have a friend with a pickup, you can pick it up yourself, or they can deliver it to you. Had a listener tell me something that I had not thought of before, because I've always just spread it with a shovel and a rake turned upside down, but had a listener tell me he used his leaf blower to spread it around his yard, and I thought that was pure genius. But if you can get somebody to help you put about half an inch of compost over it, give it a good watering, and either before or afterwards some fertilizer, that is the best thing that I have ever found to rejuvenate a yard. It tends to take care of most of the weed problems and just helps the grass to spread back into those areas very quickly.
Okay, but some are just bare. And the adjoining Augustine doesn't look that great either. So I was thinking about having somebody come down and put some sod in that area. If they do, should they press it in like with a roller?
Oh, yeah. You do that in any situation. If you were going to do that, I would take a hard rake and rake out as much of the dead grass as you can. And, you know, that's an option, and that's instant yard, and that's very expensive. Many times it's just that your grass that's there is probably not all that bad. It just needs a chance to grow and spread. The other thing that I tell people is the bare areas are big. Go into an area where you have pretty good grass and just dig up some little squares that are maybe 4 inches, 4 inches across, and replant those in the open areas. That way you know you're getting grass that's used to your area, and most of the time it takes off and grows very well. So if you want to, so to speak, do it yourself, I think the compost and maybe even digging some little squares for your own grass, I would tell you in most cases by the middle of the summer you'll have a pretty good looking yard. If you want to make it happen instantly, there's nothing at all wrong as long as you can get some good grass. I deal with somebody like Thomas Stone and Landscape out toward Bull Verde. They've got the best grass I've seen, and I probably would choose a variety like either Del Mar or Palmetto. But we're talking here the difference in spending a few $100s and spending several $1,000s, and my budget tells me to try the inexpensive way first, and then you can go the other way if I absolutely have to.
Right. Okay. So I have some good grass at the side of the house, so I can dig 4-inch squares, but this is bare soil we're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
The grass doesn't grow there anymore. So should I rake that up before I put that sod square in there?
If you want to, you can. Do you know what the tool called a grubbing hoe is?
Yes.
It's kind of like a pickaxe, but has a flat blade. And again, in my past years, one of the nurseries I worked with, we had a grass farm, and I grew grass and I planted grass. And we would have one man would take the squares of grass and chop it into those little 4-inch squares. The second would go along with a grubbing hoe and just kind of gouge out a little hole in the ground. The guy behind him would throw down a piece of grass and stomp on it and just walk along planting a little square, you know, every 18 inches or so. And that's how yards were planted back before people started just, you know, throwing money to the wind and putting it in solid sod. So you don't have to go to a lot of work. Just a quick swing with a grubbing hoe, gouge out that little area an inch deep and the size of the piece of sod you're putting in, throw it down and stomp on it. And if you've got a friend that's carrying a few extra pounds, have him walk behind you and stomp on it. Water well, and it's a pretty simple process.
Okay, well, what about putting some compost on top of that little square?
That would be great. That would be very good. Remember, you never put compost underneath, because compost generates lots of carbon dioxide. But no, compost on top of grass or ground cover or anything else. I mean, Mother Nature's been doing that for millions of years in the forms of leaves and twigs and other things. And when you get the mature compost, it's just that much better. And that'll be good for anything.
Okay. And then when should I add fertilizer?
I would actually probably do it beforehand, because organic products do not burn and they don't have to be watered in. So, I would do that this afternoon if I could. Do the rest when you have time. But the fertilizer and the compost, those are the top two things on the list. And then planting some additional pieces of sod will come when you have the time. But there's no reason to wait to fertilize. Organic products do not burn. And they don't go to work till they get watered in, but there's no rush to water. It's not like this chemical stuff that you better have somebody behind you with the hose or it starts burning.
Right. Well, what I was talking about, after the little square is planted, mm-hmm. then add a quarter to a half inch of compost on top of that, and then fertilizer on top of those little squares.
That's fine. In an ideal world, I put the fertilizer on top of the squares and put the compost on top of the fertilizer, because the microbes in the compost are what are going to digest the fertilizer and make it more readily available to the plants. But it works either way. But if you wanted to do it perfectly, I'd do the squares, and then I would do the fertilizer, and then I would do the compost.
Okay, well, thank you. Wish me luck.
Absolutely. You'll do a good job of it. And be sure and take some before pictures so you can stand back and be proud of yourself afterwards.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it.
You're sure welcome. Thank you. Don, let's go ahead and bring Natalie up. Natalie, we've got about 2 minutes till news, so if necessary, we'll hold you through the news break, but let's get started. Are you there, Natalie?
Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. I would like to know what kind of fast-growing evergreen tree that gets about 40 feet tall that I could plant in a southern portion of my yard.
The fastest-growing evergreen tree is going to be what we call a Mexican live oak, or a Monterey oak is another name. Grows much faster than the traditional live oak, and it is resistant to oak wilt. So doesn't grow as fast as some of the deciduous trees like Mexican sycamore, but the fastest growing evergreen tree, and that's about the average height, somewhere between 30 to 40 feet. But if you ask for a Monterey oak or a Mexican live oak, that's going to be the tree you're looking for.
Okay. You say Monterey. How do you spell Monterey?
Monterey, just like Monterey in Mexico or California, Monterey.
Okay. So would you prefer that Mexican live oak over the Monterey?
The Mexican live oak and Monterey oak are the same tree, just two different names for the same tree.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. Wow. It's easier than saying Quercus polymorpha, which is its botanical name. If you ask for Mexican live oak or Monterey oak, those are exactly the same.
Well, and I thank you so much. Now, I want to tell you what I found in my yard that works great in place of compost.
Uh-huh.
Is humate.
Mm-hmm. Well, humate is just super digested compost. Humate is ideal, but if you watch the breakdown of things, you go from mulch to compost to humate with enough time and pressure, that's what also turns into coal and oil. But either dry humates or liquid humates are just magical. But it's just compost that's been processed for a few thousand more years, and humates are excellent things to use, and I'm certainly glad you brought it up. We've got to take a break for some news here. We'll be right back.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
And we do have a couple of lines still open, and we have another hour to talk. So if you call right now, you'll be getting a line behind Scott and Steven, but nothing wrong with that. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Pull over a minute. I'm in a Jeep, and it's kind of loud. Pull over.
Well, and for the safety of yourself and those around you, it's a good plan.
Two questions. Is it too early to put coxcomb seeds out?
It depends on what you think the weather's going to do. We've started getting coxcomb plants and coxcomb seeds. If you plant the seeds, it's probably about 2 weeks before they're really going to be germinated and growing. And hopefully, 2 weeks from now, we're going to be pretty close to the 1st of April. and we should be beyond the danger of frost. Now, the latest freeze in San Antonio is in early April, so I can't tell you 100%, but I will tell you seed's cheap, and I think I'd probably be planting it. Just understanding if I have to replant it, it's no big thing, but I think you're probably safe to plant it.
Every year I harvest the seeds from the flowers, mm-hmm. and I have a big box of them, and I just kind of broadcast them. I've got kind of a rock garden.
Yeah.
Is that just kind of broadcasting through the rocks and it falls down and water it?
If that's worked for you in the past, that works just fine. Is yours a fairly tall growing one, gets up a foot to 2 feet in height?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that one is very easily grown from seed. In fact, many people that have it in the yards don't ever replant it. It just keeps coming back year after year. But I think you're doing exactly the right thing. I would always hold the little seed back just in case something weird happens and your first crop doesn't do well. Because as you well know, they seed pretty profusely. So never plant all your seed at one time. But growing that, that's kind of a tough old-fashioned plant, and share it with your friends. We would truly call that an heirloom variety, and it deserves to be planted more for people that have the room to grow a big form of coxcomb.
Yes, a quick question, and I'll ask the question and hang up. We're out in St. Hedwig, and as I drive, bluebonnets and wildflowers are just ubiquitous. Love them. How do I have about a half acre lot next? Well, it's a half acre lot next to our house. How do I plant or cover that area with seed and have a nice, beautiful area that I can admire as I...
Okay, well, you can hang up or not, but I might want to ask another question or two.
Oh, sure.
Number one, you need to start with good local seed. There are actually, I think, six or seven different species of bluebonnet, and you want to be sure that you are getting the one that grows well here. For most wildflower seed, I recommend Wild Seed Farms up in Fredericksburg because they grow their own seed right here in our area, and it would certainly be fine in St. Hedwig. So number one, be sure that you're not getting a Colorado variety or something that's not going to do well here to begin with. And planting seed, you want to be sure that you have good seed to soil contact. None of the Texas wildflowers, really, the seed does not need to be buried, but it needs to land on dirt rather than landing on leaves or debris or things like that. So I don't know, I used to sometimes pull a rock rake around just to pick up the stems and leaves and, you know, sticks and things that were there. But do what you need to be certain that the seed that you plant, you know, makes good contact with the soil. In the case of bluebonnet seed, a lot of people talk about scarifying or scratching the seed. If you get fresh seed that's no more than a year old, then you don't need to do that. If you get older seed, find somebody that's got a gem tumbler and throw it in there with a little bit of carborundum, because that will help it germinate more quickly. But I will tell you, and having talked to Mr. Thomas that owns Wild Seed Farms, and of course they grow and harvest their own seed, he said that when they really go out to plant a field, they figure on planting about 40 pounds per acre. Maybe as little as 15 up to as much as 40, just depending on what your budget, you know, allows. He said that when they harvest the seed, that they generally get about 200 pounds of seed per acre, and they figure they get a third of it. So that means that once your wildflowers are established, you're going to be producing, you know, several hundred pounds of seed per year. So nobody can afford to put down as much as nature puts down. And I tell you, bluebonnet seed's gotten very expensive. It's about four times the price it was 3 years ago. And I think there's just the winters, you know, reduce the amount of seed that they've gotten because we've had freezes at just the wrong time. But recognize that on your acre, 2 acres, 10 acres, however much you choose to plant, you're basically just inoculating it. You're just getting started with it. Plant what you can afford to plant. Now, bluebonnet seed is, you know, fairly heavy, and if you can plant several pounds per acre, that would be good. Paintbrush seed is very, very tiny. In fact, at one point, John told me the worldwide harvest of any paintbrush seed is about 8 pounds per year or something like that. So it's a much, much finer seed, and you know, you want to distribute it fairly widely, but there's several other things. There are some larkspurs, there's some coreopsis, there are a bunch of different things, some different poppies that do well as wildflowers in this area. But the important thing is once you've planted them, once you've had them come up and bloom for you for the first time, be sure that you don't shred that field. Be sure you don't cut things back until you've had time for your plants to make good seed for the coming year. And typically, warm weather weeds are not a problem because the wildflowers are going to grow when the weather's cooler. They're going to produce their seed before we really have, you know, a lot of weeds coming up. Cool weather weeds, and that can be oats or wheats or anything else, those are things that compete with the wildflowers. So be sure you're not overseeding. And if you have you know, a lot of cool weather weeds come up, you might want to spray some vinegar and orange oil early in the season before your wildflowers come up, because cool weather weeds compete, warm weather weeds do not. So I guess that's getting blue or getting wildflowers started 101. Does that give you the information you need?
It does. And I know it's too late, obviously, to plant it now. In our area, October, November, December?
As a broad planting date, yes, that's October, November is the ideal time. Now, there's some things like California poppy that can still be planted this late. Some of the coreopsis can still be planted this late. So if you just want to feel good about getting started, get in touch with them and get what you're getting is, in effect, some of the summer wildflowers. And coreopsis in particular, what they call Indian blanket, is absolutely gorgeous on into the summer. California poppy is a late spring thing, so there are some wildflowers you could plant now. Bluebonnets, paintbrush, things like that. Yes, October, November are going to be the best time to plant those things.
I appreciate you. Thank you. Enjoy your day.
It is my pleasure. You enjoy that. This is a good Jeep day. We had a CJ for many years, and I tell you, lots of happy memories of the top down on that thing. So you get out and enjoy your Sunday.
Yes, sir. Will do.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. Thank you. I guess, yeah, let's go ahead and talk to Stephen, and then we'll get a break in. Good morning, Stephen. Stephen dropped off. Well, Don, why don't you record what you have in commercials there, and then we'll get back to the phone calls.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening, and let's see here. Looks like it's going to be Pat and Stephen and Michael, and let's just get started. Pat's first in line. Good morning, Pat.
Hi.
Good morning.
One quick question for you.
Okay. Okay.
I'm getting ready to put my first sweet tea olive in the ground, and my notes say that it needs morning sun and afternoon shade. I was wondering, what happens if I have to put it in full sun?
It will be a little lighter green. It will not be, it'll look just slightly more ragged, but it will still grow just fine. You'll still get that beautiful fragrant scent every January. If I were going to plant it in full sun, and I've seen them growing just fine in full sun, but I would improve the soil. This is one place I'd probably work some compost in, just get the soil in as good shape as possible. It's easier if it doesn't get any of that blistering afternoon sun, but if you take care of it, mulch it, be sure it's properly watered, you'll do okay in the sun with it.
Okay, that's all I needed. Thank you so
very
much.
Good.
I'm gonna try.
It's the botanical name of that plant is Osmanthus fragrans, and anytime you see a plant that has fragrans in the name, you know it's going to smell good. And I just can't think of anything, especially at the winter months, which is when it starts blooming. You're going to enjoy that a great deal. So you enjoy, and we'll talk again. And I appreciate the call. I'm sorry.
One follow-on on that. Would it be best to do it in full sun or lean more towards the more shade?
It would be happier with a little bit more shade. Best solution is to plant two of them, one in the sunnier area, one in the shadier area. But if I only had room for one, I'd be going more toward the shade. It'll bloom either place, but it'll be a much prettier plant if you have it a little bit of protection from that hot afternoon stuff.
But what about quite a bit shade? Under oak or something like that.
Is it bright enough to cast a shadow? That's my general definition of bright shade. If I can stand out there and see my shadow, that's enough sunlight for it. If you can't see your shadow, probably needs to go in a sunnier spot.
Okay, great. Thank you much. I'll put it out.
You are so welcome. Thank you. Goodbye. All right, next in line is Stephen. Good morning, Stephen.
Hey, good morning, Bob. Hey,
good morning, sir.
I got a friend that listens to you a lot, and he says, man, Bob really does not like that loblolly pine, and he's already lost one. And so what he did is he planted four, and then he went and got some pine straw mulch to try to turn it into, turn the soil into like a East Texas soil.
Sure.
What are your thoughts?
and
he planted four thinking that maybe if I lose one, it might be okay.
Again, loblolly is a beautiful pine. It just doesn't do well here because, you know, you can improve the top of the soil, but if that tree's going to grow, you know, up to any size at all, it's going to put its roots down into soil that has a pH it doesn't like, that's full of things it doesn't like. Down at the botanical gardens here in San Antonio, they have some beautiful pines down there, and they only brought in the equivalent of about, 10,000 dump trucks full of East Texas soil in order to get enough soil for them to go to grow well. So, you know, if he really, really wants to grow loblolly pine, tell him to buy a trucking company and just start hauling soil, because pine needle mulch is a great idea, but it's not going to, you know, totally solve the problem. If I were going to try to grow one, I would do a raised bed. I would do a sandy, loamy soil. But just remember, those roots are going to continue to grow, and they're going to grow down into soil they don't like. So your best bet is to grow a pretty pine tree that likes this area. There's one called Halepensis, also known as Aleppo pine. And it makes a big pine tree. The needles are a little shorter than they are on loblolly, but it is a pine tree. I see them here that are in Bernie also that are 40, 50 feet tall and quite attractive. So there are pines that will grow, but slash pine, loblolly pine, those are pretty much strictly East Texas pines. So unfortunately, I doubt long term that any of the four are going to be happy. But tell them to go find an Aleppo pine, or like I say, bring in about 50 dump trucks full of soil to grow it in.
Okay, I'll tell him.
it's kind of like I think Mark Twain said, the best way to not have to remember what you told somebody is just to tell the truth. And so I'd love to be able to tell you or tell him what he wants to hear, but it just wouldn't be the truth. So sorry, that's not the answer you're looking for, but based on a lot of years, that's my experience.
Well, he's seen a few in the neighborhood that have survived. So
I think he's probably seeing Halepensis. I doubt if he's seeing loblolly.
Okay, good to know. Hey, I have another question. I have one of those rusty Black Hall viburnum.
Yeah, yeah.
I planted about five of them. I found some. I bought all five of them, and I've had it in the ground about a year, and then it just up and died. And the other four that I got were doing just fine.
And how much sun or shade are they in?
Well, the one that died, it has considerably more sun.
That's what I would expect. It probably, rusty Black Haw, the happiest place that I see it growing in the hill country, it's always under the shade of something else. It just, you know, we had a brutal summer. I like the sun. I like the heat, but I do not remember as unpleasant a summer as we had last summer. That sun just had a different intensity to it, and there are a lot of plants that normally would take it that just didn't. I'm glad you've still got four of the rusty Black Haws, but they should be a real good plant for you in the shade, but it's not something I'd recommend putting out in a sunny area.
Okay. Yeah, it bloomed up and then just died.
Mm-hmm.
I figured that's what it was.
And that's what, when a plant gets stressed, it's always, you know, sadly, a lot of times the best growth you will see best blooms you will see on a plant that's in stress, because something chemically inside that plant says, hey, I think I might die, I better make some seed. So having a good crop of flowers doesn't necessarily mean the plant's super healthy. So
I think
your ones in the shade should do fine, though.
Awesome. Very cool plant. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. You do the same. Thanks for the call. All right. Don, let's go ahead and get a break just so we don't get behind. And Michael will be up next.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, let's get back to gardening and back to the phone lines. By the way, just a couple of open lines and don't have a lot of time left in the show, so grab one of them if you like, 210-599-5555. And Michael is in line next. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, Bob, good morning.
Good morning to you.
I appreciate your show.
Well, thank you. I enjoy being here for you.
And I got several questions. It's all around fertilizer. So pre-emergent, what's the best time to apply it, and what's the best type to use, and what's the latest time to apply it?
Good questions. You need to understand that pre-emergent fertilizers, pre-emergent products, do not kill weed seed. Pre-emergent products allow the seed to germinate, but then if the weather's right, they keep the seedling from forming a root, and then they just shrivel and die from dehydration. So with winter weeds that come up very early in the spring, you would want to put your pre-emergent product on probably, depending on the weather, December or January, because once the seed has sprouted, pre-emergent does absolutely nothing against it. The problem with pre-emergents is that they are digested, they are broken down by microbes in the soil, so they don't last a real long time. And when we have something like sticker burrs and things like that that can sprout, can germinate anywhere from about March all the way through October, it becomes almost cost prohibitive because you're having to put your pre-emergent on four or five times a year. And especially in a year like this when we never know when we're going to get rain or when we're not going to get rain. So It's not a magic bullet. It's not something you're going to put out once and solve all of your weed problems. And some years are going to be a little tougher than others. Now, I, of course, prefer the non-toxic ones. You're going to see a lot of toxic weed killers out there that are known cancer causers in the pre-emergence. The best one that you can do this, a natural product, is called corn gluten meal. It's not cornmeal, it's corn gluten meal. It's a protein component of the corn, which is left over after they take the high fructose corn syrup out of it. And it works as well as the chemicals do, but I have to tell you, it's getting a little late this year. Now, if you're thinking of using it for sticker burrs, you can, probably going to have to put it on two or three times. My experience has been, and I had a patch in my front yard, that a pretty good sized patch, that the sticker burrs were so thick that the dogs wouldn't even walk into it. I put about half an inch of compost on one fall, spread it around, and the next year, I think I pulled like three sticker burrs where I probably had 3,000 before. So in general, I think, you know, and compost does a lot of good things. So on grassy areas, I'd spend my money on compost rather than spend it on pre-emergence. But if you want to go with a pre-emergent, that's sort of the ABCs of it. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. Sure does. And I'm very familiar with that corn gluten, and it has worked well on sticker burrs that we've tried to control at our place down at the Crost, and it's done a good job with that.
Yeah. But and plus, the nice thing about corn gluten is high in nitrogen. It's actually a pretty good fertilizer as well. So you're always getting a double benefit, even if you still have a few weeds.
Okay, good. Other couple of questions around fertilizers for trees. I got a Meyer lemon that I'm not sure it's going to make it because it looks like it froze back. I haven't cut it back yet, but I intend to do that. And then oak trees and roses and fig trees. What kind of fertilizer can I use for all of that? If it's different, that's okay, but...
No, it's any basic organic product is going to, you know, is going to do the job. If you wanted to be technical, you know, roses like a little bit more magnesium. So I just put some Epsom salts out. There are a few things that like a little more iron, but you certainly don't have to go out and buy six different fertilizers for six different plants. And any good basic organic product is going to work fine on all of them. Medina makes a real good one they call Growing Green. Nature's Creation makes a good one they call Premium Lawn Food. Maestro makes a good one they call Texas Tea. Those are all three very good products, and your trees would be happy with any of them. Medina's is a poultry litter base. Nature's Creation is an alfalfa base. Maestro Grows is based on feather meal, leather meal, and a few other things like that. But they're all excellent fertilizers. Now, to address the problem with your lemon that seems to be struggling, is it's probably a grafted tree. Can you see a graft point down at the base?
You know, I bought it at Home Depot, so I okay. couldn't tell you if it...
It's definitely it a grafted. Yeah, definitely a grafted tree. And the rootstock is always more cold hardy. The rootstock is always stronger than the Myers lemon, which is almost certainly what it is, or it could be ponderosa. But what you need to do is look right at the base of the tree, and any growth that's coming out below that point, and you normally when you look at the trunk of the tree, you'll see it comes up, looks it's got a little stub probably the size of a big pencil, and then it'll have it kind of jogs to the side, and the top of the tree comes up from there. Anything that comes out below that point is growing off the rootstock, and it is not a lemon, and it is not going to produce anything that you would find edible. Anything that comes out above that point is your actual what was grafted onto the rootstock, which is your lemon. So cut off immediately anything you see below the graft point. Let what is above come out. Now, if it starts sprouting out 6 inches above the graft, you can pretty much assume everything above that point in the tree is dead, and go ahead and just cut it back. But it's got a good root system, so it can regrow a whole lot faster than it grew the first time. You just have to get down on your hands and knees and make real certain it's not the rootstock that's coming out. Cut off anything you see below the graft and let the rest come out.
Okay, and then on that, any type of organic fertilizer for those trees, I've gotten some landscape essentials from you, and then my brother gave me some Medina fertilizer. Will that work on those trees as well?
That will work on the trees just fine. And let me tell you about the landscape essentials that we offer. When we find a product that is we think is the best out there, we go to the people that make it and say, how would you make it better? We love the Growing Green from Medina, which is probably what your brother got. But we went to Stuart Frankie and said, Stuart, if you were doing this over again, what would you do? And he said, I'd add more green sand and more humates. And we said, okay, add more green sand and humates and put it in our bag. So what we sell as landscape essentials is just Growing Green that has a few extra things put into it. So both of those are excellent fertilizers.
Okay, and then one other question, and I think you answered it earlier. I got a bunch of clover in my yard, but you mentioned about putting some half an inch of compost and spread it around. Maybe that'll take care of that problem too for me.
It certainly will help. Now realize that clover is talking to you, as it were. Clover is saying, man, your soil is really hard. I'm growing here because nothing else wants to grow in this super hard soil. Clover actually builds soil. Clover is a legume. It has little nodules on its roots full of bacteria that can take nitrogen out of the air, convert it into fertilizer. So clover is not really a problem. It's sort of an indicator plant that tells you it needs that compost, that it needs a little bit of, extra nitrogen. And so what you're going to find is when you improve the soil, the clover stops coming back. So I'm not a big fan of killing all the clover because it's actually trying to help improve the soil. So put your compost on. Don't worry about the clover. Between the two of them, they'll get the soil to the point that the clover is just too rich for the clover and it'll stop growing back.
Okay, good. Very good. And just a shout out real quick to Dr. Kirby. They do a great job over there at Alamo Heights Pet Clinic. I know I've run into you a couple of times passing in and out of there. So they do a great job.
Sometimes it's me taking one of my many animals in for a checkup or whatever, and sometimes it's just me going back there to see what's going on in the clinic and maybe get a bad joke or two from Ryan and Fernie. But he's just the best of the best. I wish he weren't so busy. I wish he could find some help, because the poor guy just works too hard. But there's not a veterinarian like him anywhere in the world. So you and I have both found a really good vet. So you get out and enjoy this beautiful Sunday. Take your dogs out with you if you can, and you'll both have a good time.
Yes, sir. And just remember, if you love what you're doing, it's not work.
That's old Malcolm Beck used to say, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. So I only work a few days, but I spend a lot of hours doing what I do, and I know you do as well. So get out and enjoy your Sunday. I appreciate the call this morning.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Goodbye. Don, let's go and get our last break of the show out of the way, and we'll be back with a good song and a time for a few more phone calls.
You can tell your old man you'll do some largemouth fishing in another town. You just got too much on your plate to bait and cast a line. You can always put a rain check in his hand till you can't. You can keep putting off forever with that girl whose heart you hold, swearing that you'll last someday further down the road. You can always put a diamond on her hand till you can. If you got a chance,
the message is you might as well go fishing. Don, it's always great to have Mr. Don Cooper Stevens doing the engineering, because that man knows more music than anybody I've ever known. And always enjoy some different kinds of fishing songs every now and then. Don, we appreciate you. We've got enough time left, I believe, to talk to Sarah and Jeff and Teague. So Sarah is first in line. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I have two hopefully easy questions for you. The first okay. one is, I have some sweet pea seeds, the vining flower, that uh-huh. I forgot to put in the ground. Is it too late for me to plant those and get some flowers this year?
Look in your crystal ball and tell me what the weather is going to do. Sweet peas are going to give up on us when the weather gets really hot. Now, they grow fairly quickly. They bloom as fairly small plants. I have to say, I think the bush form blooms a little faster, but if the vinings are what you have, seed's cheap, and it's worth trying. Get them planted as quickly as you can. Of course, a good sunny area, of course, fairly good soil and plenty of moisture. And if spring stretches out a little bit, as it typically does in years when Easter comes a little bit later, like it does this year, then you may very well get at least a number of flowers. If you planted them back in December, you probably would have had a much longer picking season. But you know, sweet peas are so fragrant, so beautiful, I think it's worth giving it a shot. And if the weather turns off hot and they don't do well, well, you just lost $2 worth of seed, and you can buy some more next year.
That's a good idea. Okay, I'll plant those today. And then my second question, I have space for one more tree, or I'm going to make space for one more tree. And,
okay.
There's a beautiful tree in Bernie that I thought was a maple, but I think it's a sweet gum. And I haven't seen any others, and I wanted to know if you could tell me about the sweet gum tree and if it's good for our area and why I don't see more of them.
Well, my old friend and mentor in the Bernie area was Mr. Alton Grimm, and Alton used to say, if you're not seeing them around here, there's probably a reason. And sweet gum is another one of those East Texas trees, and there is a sweet gum I know of that's pretty. It's about a block and a half from HEB, but I couldn't tell you exactly where it is there. But there is at least one sweet gum in Bernie, but the people must have brought in a great deal of soil improvement to do it. If you want to get one and experiment with it, you know, you need an area with deep soil. You need an area with fairly rich soil, but it's not going to be an easy tree for you to grow.
Okay. That's the one I'm thinking of, a block and a half from HEB, yeah. Right on the corner. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. Okay. Okay. Well, my other option then is an Eve's Necklace.
Uh-huh.
Is that a better tree for our area?
Eve's Necklace is an excellent tree for our area. It's not really a shade tree. It's kind of a, let's just say it doesn't have a real attractive shape most of the time, but it's first cousin to a mountain laurel. In fact, it's the same genus as mountain laurel, but that's where the similarity ends. Mountain laurels are evergreen. Eve's Necklace drops all its leaves. Mountain laurels make a very compact, you know, cluster of flowers. Eve's Necklace makes a more open cluster of flowers. The seed pod on Eve's Necklace, you know, is much more spread out. It's like a black seed and then a little stem area and then another black seed and then another black seed that, if you had a good enough imagination, would remind you of a necklace. And that, of course, is where the name comes from. It's an excellent tree, grows wild all over my business partner's ranch over near Bergheim. And so, it's going to be what I would call a specimen tree, or it's going to be a tree of interest, but it's not going to be a shade tree, and it's not the most beautiful tree in the world, but it certainly grows well, and it certainly has a lot of good qualities to it. They're leafing out right now. They're just the softest, prettiest green you've ever seen, and they are interesting. They have more of a pinkish flower, but Eve's Necklace is going to be a lot easier to grow.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Enjoy the beautiful day.
You do the same. I appreciate the call this morning. Thank you, Sarah. All right, next in line is Jeff. Good morning, Jeff.
Yes, sir. About 4 years ago, we planted about 8 Arizona cypress trees. We wanted a real tall canopy along a property line.
Right.
And 5 of them are doing really well, but 3 on one end of the row grew like wildfire when we first planted them. Actually grew taller than the other ones, but then they just kind of quit and turned kind of brown on the ends of them and got very thin. The cores of them seem fine. They're green inside, but toward the outside, they're just really brown.
Uh-huh.
I was just wondering what you think about that.
How do you water them?
Well, they're watered with Guadalupe River water, so they get plenty of water.
But, I mean, what do you have, drip irrigation, soaker hoses? What do you have?
No, they're just sprinkler heads that spray on them.
My bet would be that the ones that aren't doing as well aren't getting as much water. I would check that by taking some little straight-sided cans, like cat food can or soup can or whatever, put out in the pattern of that sprinkler head, and my guess is you're going to find that in the area where the trees are doing well, it's getting about 3 times as much water as the others are. So Arizona cypress is one of those trees. It's not the most beautiful thing in the world, but can be grown as a windbreak. But where you've got several of them in all the same soil and all pretty much the same conditions, if you have one section of them that's not doing as well, 99% of the time it's a water issue, and I'd be willing to bet you the ones that are not happy are simply not. They may be getting some water, but they're not getting watered as thoroughly as the others.
Okay, is there a chance of overwatering?
Unlikely. Whereabouts do you live?
New Braunfels.
Okay. Water doesn't hurt anything. It's a very common misconception that water, too much water, hurts plants. What happens if you have too much water is water drives the oxygen out of the soil, and a plant's root system has to have oxygen. If somebody stuck your head in a bucket of water for 10 minutes, the water didn't kill you. The lack of oxygen did. And if the soil stays just absolutely saturated to where it's driven the oxygen out of the soil, then the roots are going to do poorly and the tree's going to do very poorly. But with our soils, unless you just dug a hole in a caliche that basically turned into a bathtub, it's much more common to see where things are not getting enough water than to see where they're getting too much. So I just remember, and this is what I always tell people, there's no such thing as too much water, but there is too often. Be sure when you water that you're watering thoroughly enough to get that water really down into the soil, really down to the root system of the plants. Then let it go till it's dry about a knuckle deep, and then water very thoroughly again. So I'm not going to totally rule out too frequent watering, but I would say it's less likely.
Yeah.
Okay. And one more thing. Is there a way to actually prune those trees? I've never heard of pruning an evergreen. I'm a little excited.
Yeah, you can prune. Any plant can be pruned. But what you want to be careful of is that you don't take off too much of the green foliage. I would tell you that you always, on a tree like this, if you prune, you don't want to take away more than 20% of the foliage. It's not where you prune or how you prune. It's the amount of foliage you take off, because those plants need the green leaves to keep on making the sugars, to keep on doing the thing that keeps the plants healthy. So if you can trim to where you want it to branch, if you can trim to take out limbs that are in the way or where you want to kind of overall change the shape of it, yeah, that's fine. But just don't remove too much of the green leafy area at any one time.
Okay. All right, sir. Thank you.
Well, good question, Jeff. I appreciate the call. Thank you. Finish the show up today with Teague. Good morning, Teague.
Good morning, Bob.
Morning, sir.
I've got several questions, so we'll see how many I get through and I may.
Got almost got over 4 minutes, so let's get to it.
Okay. I've got an old Althea that was heavily shaded, and I cut away the overhanging crepe myrtle. It's kind of got a squirrely shape, so I think I need to do some pruning to straighten it up a little. Do they respond well to that?
You're getting awful late. Altheas, I would like to prune them in January, February. Has it already started putting on its spring growth?
It has.
Yeah. I hate to set the tree back by, it put a lot of energy into making that spring growth, and if you cut all that off, then the tree basically, or the plant, has to start over. And if it's a little stressed to begin with, I wouldn't suggest it. Next spring, okay. Yeah, next January, next February, you can prune it fairly heavily if you like. But at this point, any pruning should probably be pretty minor.
Okay, now I've got a sweet olive. It's growing on the north side, and it's underneath a second-story overhang. It's just happy as it can be, but it's getting so big, it's blocking the view out of the kitchen window to the backyard.
Okay.
It needs a hard pruning to shape it. It smells wonderful, but it's actually bigger than it needs to be to perfume the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Can I give it a hard pruning?
Yeah, you can do it right now because it's just finished blooming. It probably, you know, January, February, the time you're going to have the most flowers. So now is the time to prune. Now, on this one, I wouldn't remove more than about 50% of the growth at any one time. So choose the longest limbs. If you feel like you need to cut it back harder than that, cut back about half the longer limbs, wait for them to put on some new foliage, and then cut back the other half.
Gotcha. Last thing, I had a really large plumeria in a pot, and mm-hmm. even though I put it in the garage during Uri, it froze to the ground. I left it, and finally some suckers came up, and they're about 3 feet tall, but they're really not, you know, they're on this otherwise kind of a rotten stump, if you will.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to cut them off and repot them. Any thoughts on that?
You can certainly do that with plumeria. If you feel the stalks and they feel good and solid and they're as big around as your thumb, I would say that they are good candidates. And what you're going to do is cut them in sections, maybe 12, 14 inches long. You're going to let the end callus. You're going to let it dry and harden, so to speak, for 3 or 4 days. And then you're just going to, you know, put them down in a probably 1 gallon container. If you want to, you can root them in perlite and then transfer them to soil. But if the plant is overall healthy. If you feel like the cuttings are pretty healthy, you can probably get away with just rooting them in soil. Fill your pots with potting soil and just put your cuttings down in there. If you want to have more of a 100% chance of having them root and do well, take one pot, fill it with perlite, the white volcanic material. You can put several cuttings into that one pot. It'll take about 6 weeks for them to root, and then you can transfer them to their own individual containers.